Slow internet. It's annoying in the best of times, and during COVID, with remote learning and working from home, it was even more obnoxious. Many people live in places with only one internet provider, so if the cost is high or the service is slow, you're kind of out of luck. According to a new report from the nonprofit Massachusetts Competitive Partnership, 34% of Massachusetts homes lack adequate broadband service. In some communities, like Springfield and Chelsea, that number is even higher than 50%. But across Massachusetts, about 50 towns are offering their own internet service in some way, in the hopes of expanding access and lowering costs. And more towns are moving to offer the services as well. Today on the show, we're talking with two local officials with two very different experiences and perspectives on municipal internet. Ian Kane is a city councilor with Quincy, where he is spearheading an effort to bring municipal internet to the town for more than 5 years. And Bill Bottigi is the general manager of the Braintree Electric Light Department, or BELD. That's the city utility. Braintree ran municipal internet for the city for 22 years before selling the service to Comcast last year. And also here with us is Evan Horowitz, the director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University. Welcome to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
Evan, I'm going to start with you. For someone who might not be familiar with municipal internet, what exactly is it? Can you define it for us?
Well, actually, there are a couple of ways to define it, but the key thing is who's providing access to the internet? That is, do we have private companies that are laying wires and selling services, or do we have the city or town that you live in doing one or both of those things, either laying wires to houses or offering service packages? If you're doing one or two of those things, you could reasonably classify that as municipal broadband. How's that for a quick definition?
It's interesting. It's like one name for two kind of different definitions.
Actually, we probably could expand it from there. There's a whole suite of things that cities and towns can do between let's own all the wires and provide all the services and let's do nothing. And all those things deserve in some sense to fall under the umbrella of municipal broadband. We have one neighborhood where we're providing nice free Wi-Fi, or we have one package that we provide to low-income people. That also, I think, could be thought of as a public service.
And could you go into a little bit more what some of the reasons are that a city or a town might start to think about offering these kinds of services?
So, I mean, you highlighted the big one, which is people don't have ready access, lots of people. And you need to have ready access to participate in the modern economy and in modern life. So the key thing to understand, though, is at least in Massachusetts, the big problem is not, hey, are there enough wires to my house? The big problem is, do I have enough money to pay for service? That is, the reason that the bulk of those people who are struggling to access the internet or get broadband struggle is not because they don't have choices. It's because they don't have enough money to really readily afford service. So the most important thing that cities and towns can do is make it more affordable, as opposed to, I think a lot of people have in their heads, no, there aren't wires running to places. That's a problem like in the Texas Panhandle. It's a much smaller problem in Massachusetts.
So some of the communities that I've seen that are doing this, it includes Norwood, Shrewsbury. These aren't exactly low-income towns. I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, almost every town has some pocket of low-income people, and that's really the big consideration, right? And we are talking about low-income. For residents of the Massachusetts, if you're earning $75,000 a year, that makes you pretty standard kind of middle-class family in Massachusetts. Odds are you've got broadband, over 95%. Right, 95% of those families have broadband. The people who are struggling are families earning less than $35,000. And in some towns, that's a lot of people. But in almost every town, that's some group of people. And the only real solution to getting them broadband is to meet them where they are and find a package that works for them. So in every town, you're going to have that group of people. And the town has the capacity to find them, to identify them, and to help them.
Do you see any trends coming up here? There were about 50 towns we mentioned, but is this growing? Is it kind of staying stagnant?
Well, this has cycled over time. You know, there was a big push probably going back 20 years when a lot of these, I just keep calling them wires just because I don't want to get the details, but like when a lot of the wires were being put down into people's homes and the towns are saying, actually, they're not going everywhere. There are not enough people. So there was a push kind of 20 years ago to say, well, we need to do more to get the wires. And then it kind of went away and became sort of more of a private thing. But then more recently, there's been this recognition that actually poverty is a big problem and the towns have a role to play there. So there's been a renewed interest in municipal involvement in the broadband space, chiefly around this issue of affordability, equity, and access.
I want to turn to two of our officials who are with us in the studio now, too, to talk about their towns. Bill, I'm going to start with you. Why did Braintree start offering municipal internet more than 22 years ago?
Back in the late 1990s, there was only one provider in town. It was the precursor to Comcast, Time Warner, and they offered only cable TV. So the town came to Braintree Electric and asked us if we'd start offering high-speed internet. So we started with high-speed internet. That's how we got into the business. We had the network installed to do remote meter reading, and it was a good match for high-speed internet.
Again, we are talking about municipal internet with Bill Botigi, who is the general manager of the Braintree Electric Light Department. Ian Kane is also with us in studio, who's the city councilor, or who is a city councilor in Quincy, and Evan Horowitz, the director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University. Ian, the next question is for you. A lot of the thinking around municipal internet was because of COVID, when we all needed to do more stuff online and at home. But you were thinking about this in 2016, pre-pandemic, by a lot. So what was happening that made you want to pursue this?
So when I first campaigned for office in 2015, this was by far the number one issue that people brought to my attention, was a lack of options for internet service providers. I think people have been fed up with the incumbent service quality as well as the price, which don't match. And so over time, I saw that I knew about Braintree, but I saw that Milton, the town next over from Quincy, was looking into developing a municipal broadband system. And so I said, why don't we do this? You know, this is a sort of a problem that we have. Residents are looking for a solution. So why don't we try to identify if we can make this happen?
Before we go too much further into the conversation, I do want to clarify again the differences between these two towns and what you're doing. Both of them do fall under that municipal internet label like we were talking about earlier, but there are different ways to do this, as we mentioned. Braintree is basically running its own internet company. Is that right?
Until recently. We recently actually sold the business.
And Quincy, you are running the lines.
We intend to run the lines. Yeah, we intend to build the backbone or the infrastructure that would support competition for internet service providers to offer their service to residents.
Okay, so Bill, can you go into a little bit more why Braintree got out of the business?
Sure. Our infrastructure was built over 20 years ago, probably 30-year-old technology. We went through the entire life cycle of the business. We started with internet, added cable TV, added telephone. Back in the mid-2000s, 2007 or so, we were competing with Comcast when Verizon Fios decided to enter the business in Braintree also. So now there's three providers, so lots of competition. The other extreme from what a lot of towns are experiencing.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds great for prices.
Right, it did help with prices. You know, we, in the end, were offering high-speed internet for $39 a month, very robust bandwidth. With that competition that Fios brought into town, it woke up Comcast, and they started marketing very aggressively in the town of Braintree, door-to-door salesmen, lots of free offerings. And we fought the good fight for about 12 years when we got to the point where we were going to have to make a major investment into our infrastructure, $5 to $7 million to upgrade it. We were down to about 2,500 customers, even though we're the hometown provider, with our offering, and we decided to exit the business instead of spending that, say, $7 million to keep 2,500 customers going.
Was it something that was making the city money, or what's that financial picture look like?
We ran it as a break-even business, so we would set our rates to pay our bills and set the rates high enough to invest in small infrastructure improvements, because we had to keep up with the speeds, and HDTV came along and DVRs came along and all the bells and whistles that people want. And we were able to compete, but couldn't convince people to switch to Braintree Electric. And we don't have the marketing budget, to be frankly with you, that the other towns do. Evan, other companies do. I'm sorry.
No, that makes sense. Evan, I do want to turn back to you for the next question. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on Braintree's decision to sell their municipal internet service.
Well, I mean, the way it's being laid out here, I think it makes good sense. That is, you're providing a service that very few of the people in your town are using, and you're not doing it to generate revenue for the town, and you've created a market where there's some relatively robust competition. Then you could think, well, what are we doing this for? What is it? What is the goal here? What's the mission? And I think that's the question, really, that towns have to ask themselves. If we want to get into the municipal broadband space, what are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to provide a service to residents? Are we trying to increase competition? And, you know, I think the numbers suggest that the main thing towns should be thinking about is, how do we get to universal broadband? That is, what we can do is fill gaps in this market, because there are gaps in this market, and a big part of it has to do with affordability. And that's a mission that towns have to take up, because even if you have three or four, you know, providers competing, they're going to struggle to serve the lowest income families in any given town. It just doesn't pay for them. And that's a role, that's a place where towns and cities can really step in and make a difference.
Ian, I'm going to turn back to you now. As a city councilor in Quincy, does it worry you to see Braintree run into investment challenges like this? Do you think that you might run into the same thing?
No, that's my short answer. You know, I love Braintree, neighboring town. We were once a part of the same unit back in the 1800s. But I think, you know, for us as a local elected official, we're trying to provide the best services for that the municipality can offer for our residents. And so, you know, we're looking at this in a number of ways. And I think that you started to allude to the fact that, yes, we looked at this before COVID, and COVID brought a whole host of different reasons and a rationale for why we should do this. People were working from home. People are educating from home. Bandwidth capacities. The incumbents raised data caps and started charging more, which was ridiculous. And then there was a larger conversation that started to take place around equity. And people started to realize that digital equity is a huge component of this equity discussion that we should be having, that allow people to adequately have access to the digital economy, to workforce, to education that they didn't. People having to go to fast food restaurants in order to get adequate Wi-Fi, right, to perform their work and to do their schoolwork. People using the library, which is a great resource that we have also. But you know, from our perspective, this is a resident-driven, community-driven project that, you know, we put out a survey to the residents of our city with our city census a couple years ago, and we got over 10,000 paper responses back through the mail, and 80% of those responses were overwhelmingly favorable. So, you know, we're moving forward because this is being driven by the residents of the city, and we're confident that this model, which, you know, we started looking at 4 or 5 years ago, is something that can be a model for other cities and towns to replicate.
Ian, I'm also wondering, there are several other towns that are moving towards or thinking about municipal internet. Wayland, Milton, near you, but also Cambridge and Falmouth, and there's a couple others too. Why do you think there's an increased interest in municipal internet?
Again, quick answer, there's resources available. There's money. So,
is that because of COVID?
It is because of COVID. There was an infrastructure bill, and then there was a larger bill. So there's a Digital Equity Act, and there was a Broadband Equity Access and Deployment program that were both launched, but there was the infrastructure bill as well. And then that availed capital to be deployed through states, and then from those states through cities and towns. And I think there's a couple of, at first when the infrastructure bill came out, there was, guidance that was released from the U.S. Treasury that was more or less trying to limit the way that people could, cities and towns could spend. Cities and towns needed to have a certain low level of broadband capacity, right? And if it met that threshold, then you couldn't use that to deploy capital for infrastructure. And so now we're seeing next level guidance come from the FCC. And I know that we're still waiting to hear on how some of that capital can be spent. But I know that there is a big push to use for low and moderate income families, public housing, very unique concepts that would change the game for people that don't have digital access. But those cities and towns that you mentioned, we're all in touch, and we're, you know, sharing best practices. And you know, to that end, we are actually establishing what's called the Massachusetts Digital Infrastructure Consortium in order to advocate for these money to be properly spent in order to support universal access to digital infrastructure.
Bill, I want to turn to you now. I mean, hearing about a lot of these resources that are coming out, the investment that the federal and state government is making, does that give you guys second thoughts about getting out of the business? Or was it really just, the replacement factor was getting so expensive?
Because of the cost of the replacement and the existing competition in town, it still makes sense to me that we got out of the business. There's so many choices available to the residents. 5G is coming also, which is going to allow wireless connectivity in the home. Starlink is another, that low Earth satellite offering. So there's lots of ways of getting high-speed internet now. So we just thought it was best to be cautious and not make that major investment.
And Ian, what are the next steps for Quincy? Can you tell me a little bit more about the future that you're looking at?
Absolutely. So we put together a master plan at the end of 2020, and there's a couple of legal steps that needed to be taken. So there needs to be a municipal light plant that's established, which will govern the infrastructure itself. And so the city council just passed an ordinance within the last 2 months, which is the first process of two votes that need to be taken in sequential sessions. So we took the first vote, we'll take the second vote in the fall, and then it needs to go to the public for a vote to form the municipal light plant, which we'll have on the ballot, hopefully, by September. At the same time, we've engaged an engineering and consulting firm who are identifying areas for pilot projects. So we've identified two areas in the city that would be adequate. They're socially and economically diverse and would make for good use of sort of a pilot project to understand how this is going to work, what construction looks like. So we're hoping to start work on that project in the next year.
And my last question goes to Evan. I want to talk about security concerns potentially with municipal internet. Is that something consumers, residents should be concerned about when it comes to getting your internet service from your city?
I can't imagine having higher security concerns for my city or, publicly controlled city or town than I have for private companies with, let's say, not always transparent information about the security and data usage. So, I don't think of it as a high-level issue. I mean, there are a couple things I did want to say. One is to kind of put a little meat on the bones of the digital equity side of things. We're doing some work in another part of the state, so I'll say that it's not exactly in the Braintree-Quincy area. But in Essex County, we found, for instance, that non-white families earning $100,000 a year have lower rates of broadband access than white families earning $50,000 a year. So this is a real thing, and it is not purely a proxy for dollars, and it needs some kind of direct attention. So thinking about what towns and cities can do makes sense. I will say, a little less convinced that laying wires is the best way to do it. The federal government is also doing things like just providing subsidies for people to buy into existing programs. That's been a major push from them and a quite successful one. And I think cities and towns would do well to think about the full range of options between laying wire and doing nothing, such as providing subsidies, doing more public Wi-Fi, identifying tracts or neighborhoods where they can really make the most impactful interventions.
That was Evan Horowitz, director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University. Also with us was Bill Buttigieg of the Braintree Electric Light Department and Ian Kane, Quincy City Councilor. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
It's great to be here.